Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week that we read back some messages you've sent into the show account recently. I've been trying to remember to say the email address toward the beginning of these episodes lately. It is contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. If you want to get in touch with feedback on any episodes we do, if you just want to tell us something interesting, if you want to ask a question, whatever you want, you know, you can write in just to say hi. It's contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. Rob, if you don't mind, I'm going to start off with this message from Lurch, which relates to several episodes.
Yeah, lurch it up.
Lurch says, "Good morning, gentlemen. Allow me to start by flogging a dead lamb." Referring back to the vegetable lamb of Tartary. Ooh, wow. We have really been getting some stragglers on this one. This has been going on for months now.
Yeah, this is not... So sometimes you know an episode is going to generate a certain amount of feedback. Some don't actually come through like you expect they will. And some, like the vegetable lamb of Tartary, just continue to pull in listener comments, which I love. I love being surprised like that.
I think I've noticed a pattern that definitely we get the most email in response to any episode that offers listeners a chance to tell us about their dreams. Not yes. Like their hopes and dreams, but their nighttime sleepy dreams.
Yeah.
Guess that's what y'all are like. Okay. Anyway, Lurch goes on to say, referring back to the vegetable lamb of Tartary, I was struck by the apparent fact, I may be misremembering, that the earliest references to the lamb/gourd were as food. Knowing how kind and thoughtful humans are to strangers, it seems quite possible that a traveler was once offered baked lamb in a gourd as a feast provided by some host as a joke. Of such things are history made.
Oh, well, that's an interesting point. I have had, in the past when I was more of a meat eater, I did have meat in a pumpkin once. So such dishes do exist.
It's been so long, I forgot what the earliest accounts were. Was it Sir John Mandeville? And didn't he? But I think he said like it was a fully formed little lamb.
Yeah, you have these different versions of it, right? Complicated are the roots of the vegetable lamb of Tartary.
Okay, Lurch goes on to say, I'm just glad it didn't catch on. Speaking of cooking, let me now turn my attention to cauldrons. I'm positive I'm not the first to float this hypothesis, so I'm rather surprised it wasn't given at least a passing mention in the episodes. Several times you guys mentioned that cauldrons have been found hidden, deliberately placed in relatively secure locations such as bogs. I've never thought of a bog as a secure location, but okay.
Yeah, it's a solid investment. Always invest in bogs.
Yes, yeah. Can't lose. Lurch says, relatively speaking, I'd suggest that cauldrons were expensive back in the day. And of course, they're still pretty heavy. Yeah, of course, this goes along with something we talked about in one of the later cauldron episodes about that paper arguing that cauldrons had social significance because they were sort of something that would be used probably not in preparing normal everyday meals, but for preparing communal meals. So if you had a cauldron, that was kind of like showing off your wealth and community significance and your power to assert social dominance by hosting feasts. But springboarding off the idea that cauldrons are expensive, Lurch says, if a horde of rampaging outsiders were threatening your home, but you couldn't flee with your valuables, what would you do? What everybody else in that situation has done throughout history. Hide the good china in the hope that it'll still be there when you return. If you return, of course. If you don't, you still want to deny the good stuff to the bad guys. Okay, so I think I understand. Lurch is suggesting that somebody may have just hidden a cauldron in the bog for safekeeping rather than intentionally depositing it there as a sacrifice to the gods, as has often been assumed.
Yeah, that's an interesting hypothesis. It's my understanding, though, that historians are going on more than just the finding of cauldrons in bogs. I mean, we have other things that have been interred there, such as bodies and so forth, that there seems to be a strong understanding that these were sacred places, that they were maybe considered a place between.
Right. You might find bodies in the bog that are not just anybody, but somebody who looks pretty strongly like a case of human sacrifice or something like that. Okay. Finally, Lurch says, I turn my attention to Weird House, in particular, Planet of the Vampires, one of my all-time favorite movies. During your commentary, Joe mentioned that he loves a good uniform. I think we both said that. I quite agree. Let me share my favorite, the uniforms of the technocrats in Things to Come. What puts these uniforms at the top of the list is the absolutely over-the-top helmet. In my opinion, these are the best cinematic uniforms ever made. Rob, I included some pictures for you to look at. We can come back and address these in a bit. But just to finish Lurch's message, on a side note, near the end of the movie is a set that leaves me in stitches every time I watch. They're preparing to use a huge gun to fire people into space, to the moon. Aside from the fact that this idea cannot work, why is there a sight on the end of the barrel? Thank you for helping the miles go by more quickly. Lurch. Okay, so I guess we should briefly introduce the idea of Things to Come, this movie from the 30s. I believe I talked about it in a previous listener mail episode that I did by myself while you were out of town once.
Yeah. This is one of those films, I've never actually seen it, but I'm familiar with it. And of course, I've been admiring this spacesuit for ages. Things to Come, 1936, widely regarded as a sci-fi classic. And one that Michael Weldon actually had of the Psychotronic Film Guides lists as one of his top 10 films of the 1930s. This one's also notable because H.G. Wells adapted his own novel for the screen in this one. And I believe this is the only time that he did this. These spacesuits are pretty great. They have... Basically, imagine a traditional spacesuit, and there's a lot of sameness in spacesuit designs in science fiction. Now, imagine one that has enough room for your head to grow in size by three sizes or more, or one that has enough room for the most outrageous hairstyle imaginable.
If you ever played GoldenEye for the Nintendo 64 and you used the cheat known as DK mode, where it would turn all the characters into Donkey Kong with giant heads and arms, this is a spacesuit made for for DK mode people.
Yeah. When you describe it like this, it sounds ridiculous. It does look a little ridiculous, but it also looks really cool in a way that's hard to really drive home why. And I think part of it is that it just does look so different, and therefore it feels like a product of a different age.
Yeah, I agree. I love a big, very sort of globular helmet like this. You know, I always love the helmets in Alien, like in the Alien franchise, mm-hmm. because they're kind of, they're like a big glass ball on the front.
Yeah, those are solid helmets for sure.
Now, coming back to what Lurch says about the space gun that's going to send people into orbit in the movie, I never noticed this before, but it is true. The barrel of this giant gun, this is not something that would be held by a human. It's like building sized. It has an iron sight at the end of the barrel. Like somebody's going to be looking down it to aim.
Yeah, I believe Weldon also said in his summary of this that he thinks like it's one of those films you can really only compare it to Metropolis. In terms of the scope of it, and I guess the time period of science fiction involved. All right, we also heard back from some folks on our Vault episode about numeracy. This one comes to us from Anna. Hello, Robert, Joe, and Seth. I enjoyed your recent Vault episode on numeracy and whether it is innate or learned. I was wondering how this relates to time. As a small child, you conceptualize time differently. Like when you were told you can play for 15 minutes, that doesn't really have much meaning. You just stop playing when your mom says it's dinner time, but you do have an idea of time passing. Rob's story about his son reminds me of something that happened to my niece, Mim. She was staying with my parents, granny and granddad to her, and my brother, her father, had taken the opportunity to go to the shops child-free. Mim and granny were playing out front of the house. Mim asked, "When will daddy be home?" Granny said, "Daddy will be home soon." And with the absolute confidence of a 4-year-old, Mim said, "But it's soon now." Hard to argue with that smiley face. I really enjoy all the content you put out, and I love the way you present it. Keep up the good work, Anna.
That's great. And so the first paragraph here about like being told you can play for 15 minutes as a child and that not really having meaning, I think it absolutely squares with my memories of childhood where time, being given time periods up to a certain point, was very mysterious to me. And at a certain point, I really remember deciding, like when I was asking on a car trip how much time was left, essentially if I was told anything less than an hour, I knew that we would be there immediately. It's like, oh, okay, we're pretty much there. And anything more than an hour, I knew it would be forever.
Yeah. I mean, it's a timeless question, especially for children. How soon is soon? How soon is now? Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash.
Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, here's another one about our numeracy episodes. This is from Andrea. Andrea says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. I've been listening to the show for at least 4 years, but I've never written in until now. Your vault episode discussing whether animals have a number sense reminded me of a cat we had years ago who was both very, very smart and very, very strange. When she was a kitten, one of her favorite pastimes was to go to the basement, pick up a strip of rag that we had torn up for staking tomato plants, carry it up the stairs in her mouth, deposit it on the kitchen floor, then return to the basement for the next one. If, however, to mess with her, we removed rag number 6 while she was down getting number 7, she would notice immediately when she returned to become very upset and search for it while meowing accusingly at us. We surmised from this that she could indeed count. I'm open to other explanations, though." Oh, and then Andrea has some other comments about enjoying listening to our show as one drifts off to sleep. But either way, yes, so we fully support that usage as well. I think this is an interesting story about the cat. Rob, have you ever seen anything like this?
No, but I absolutely have no reason to doubt that this cat has a full range of numeracy. I mean, I can't think of any other hypothesis that could possibly explain this. This cat has the maths.
This cat will prove the Riemann conjecture.
No, I really don't even know what to make of this. I would seriously guess that the cat does not have any kind of a number sense, that there's some other reason for one rag rather than the other rag, but that it has nothing to do with the numbers that are printed on there.
Yeah, it's been a while since we did the episode, so now I'm afraid, it's, you know, we talk about these things and sometimes they sort of partially leave my head, or sometimes more than partially. I think it was that, you know, that I think the conclusion was that a lot of animals seem to have maybe a sense of numeracy for a few numbers, like 1, 2, 3 or so. Mm-hmm. But after that, differences get kind of lost. Like, you wouldn't expect a non-human animal to tell the difference between 6 and 7. Does that sound right to you?
Quantity, yeah. Here's 6 cat treats, here's 7 cat treats. If my memory is correct on this, yeah, it means that the cat probably can't tell the difference between those quantities, where it could tell the difference between, say, 2 and 7.
Yeah.
And in terms of the numbers 6 and 7, Absolutely not. Unless, I mean, there would have to be some other factors involved, something scent related, or I don't even know if sound related. It could be possible, I guess, if there's something attached to the strips. I don't know. There have to be some other elements in play here.
The closest I can see to that is my dog knows that he gets two dog treats after dinner. And if he just gets one, he knows that he is owed another one. He doesn't forget. But I don't know. If he were to get seven after dinner, he might just lose track.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to test. Okay. Tonight, it's seven treats. And then keep that up for a little bit and then bring him down to six and see if he complains.
All right, you want to do some of these messages about sky bridges?
Yeah, this was one where I knew we would hear from folks on these, and I was not disappointed. This one comes to us from Jeff. Jeff says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. I just finished listening through the first and second episode on sky bridges, and I've got a few thoughts. I grew up and currently live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, which regularly gets colder than negative 40 degrees Celsius for days or weeks at a time during the winter, and often gets warmer than 30 degrees Celsius in the summertime. As a result, our entire downtown is basically connected by various sky bridges, underground tunnels, and covered arcades, making it quite simple to get from a person's house, then to work, and including a chance to walk around underground tunnels to do some additional shopping on your lunch break in the underground mall. I lived in a high-rise for a few years, and navigating indoors to get to concerts, restaurants, and even my grocery shopping was quite simple if I wanted to avoid the elements. I also used to work at the University of Manitoba, which is almost entirely connected by underground tunnels, so that in the extreme cold, it is easy for students and staff to get from building to building. A benefit to having this protected connectivity that often goes overlooked is the increased accessibility for people with mobility concerns, especially in a city like Winnipeg that gets tremendous snow when ice builds up throughout the year, and navigating with assistance devices and bulky clothes can be quite difficult and cumbersome. I could talk about the subject for hours, so I will end it there, but I appreciate what you do. Keep up the good work. Jeff."
Great points, Jeff.
Yeah. But first on, a cold city or a city that is often cold, and then the mobility issues. That's a big concern.
Along the same lines with the relationship between skybridge density and weather, we got a message from Kenya. Kenya says, "Hello, I'm surprised you focus so much on Atlanta instead of Minneapolis or St. Paul, which have intricate mazes of skywalks connecting a good number of buildings downtown. I went to St. Paul on a work trip in the dead of winter. Our team stayed at a hotel that wasn't on the Skyway, while the client team stayed in a hotel that was connected to the Skyway. I remember them showing up without their coats while we were freezing. They forgot to tell us about this. On subsequent days, walking to the worksite from our hotel, we walked to the closest building on the Skyway and snaked our way through buildings to get to work. Food, convenience stores, a post office, and everything you could need were in that maze. I would also love for you guys to talk about underground tunnels that work the way that skywalks do. At one point in the Crystal City part of Arlington, Virginia, there was no foot traffic. Everything was underground. The Crystal City Underground isn't what it used to be. At one time, it had an arcade and a movie theater. Now it just contains some lunch spots and a theater while connecting several buildings to the metro station. I've always thought it dark and dank, but it's a similar concept, just without sunlight. Toronto has a similar underground tunnel system. Your show is always a good listen. Kenya."
Oh, well, thank you, Kenya. Let's see. First, on the Atlanta point, first of all, we are in Atlanta, so it is kind of that's kind of neat to focus a little bit on our home city here. But also, I found that some of the social elements in play and some of the social criticism of sky bridges and some of these connected walkways, they're a little more pronounced here in Atlanta versus a city that has extreme cold weather going on. But still, I'm very much enjoying these examples that are coming to us from northern cities. And as for tunnels, don't tempt us. We'd love to do some episodes on tunnels in the future. I'm always fascinated by subterranean passageways for humans, for trains full of humans, for non-human entities as well. So, I think we could easily explore that in the future.
Rob, I would say you have chronic tunnel bug in the brain. You will never pass up a chance to talk about tunnels.
I love a tunnel. And we have some tunnels here in Atlanta, though we're not nearly as underground a city as many others. I mean, so the best examples are certainly far from here. But even then, I love it when I'm in like a train tunnel here in Atlanta on our MARTA system.
All right, one last message about Sky Bridges. This is from Pat. Pat says, "Very interesting episodes. Thanks ever so much. I was reminded of a not-so-spectacular example in Brooklyn. When I was a boy, I loved visiting the Abraham Strauss department store on Fulton Street in downtown Brooklyn. The development and history of department stores is a cool subject. This wonderful old store had many departments and an annex building with availability of products not found in other department stores in the 60s. At this one store, you could buy, quote, under drawers and..." I'm not sure I understand the accent being portrayed in this quote, "under drawers and the machine to wash them in. One reached the annex through a skybridge. I loved this entrance and I never missed the opportunity. You talked briefly about roofs over cities. I read long ago about an idea about creating a second level in Manhattan. The lower level would be traffic only. The upper level would be pedestrian only. Sure, there would be a dark underground, but this is not a living space. It's a way of securing pedestrians from the perils of vehicular traffic. Do keep up the fun work, Pat."
Oh, well, that last point is very much in keeping with some of the reasons behind creating the sky bridges, yeah, and some of these sort of fantastic architectural solutions. Like, let's get the people away from the vehicular traffic. Let's create a safe barrier between the two. By the way, speaking of Brooklyn, I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but if anyone out there, if you find yourself in New York, in Brooklyn, as a tourist, or maybe you just live there and you haven't checked this out for yourself, the New York Transit Museum is excellent. It is in an old subway station. And so you get to check out these examples of older cars with, you know, older style advertisements on them, on the train tracks themselves, in an actual subway station.
Wow.
All right, and here's one more, and this is not really a direct response to Weird House so much, but it's kind of in keeping with the stuff we talk about on Weird House. This is a response to recent discussions of local TV horror hosts, and who's this coming from?
Well, I'm not sure what name this guy wanted us to use, so we'll skip the name, I guess.
Okay, from somebody. Here comes some listener mail. "All, I grew up on Sammy Terry hosting horror films in the 70s and some of the 80s. The pics on the wiki page don't do him justice, so I have attached a picture for your viewing pleasure, enjoying the show and encouraging you to keep up the good work." And there's what do we have here, Joe? We have some pictures of Samuel Terry, and you shared some video footage with me earlier.
Well, so this picture is a screen grab I took that this listener attached some other links in the email. But Sammy Terry, if you're not getting it yet, that is a pun name like cemetery. But when I was like, okay, I'm not familiar. Sammy Terry was an Indianapolis area local TV horror host. You can look up it. There's a bunch of clips of him on YouTube. The one I watched was an intro to some movie. I don't know what movie he was going into, but he gave the most bizarre monologue about how, you could be running from a madman, and then while you're running from the madman, perhaps you get abducted by aliens, and then you finally make it home safe, only to discover that your tap water has been poisoned by a, like, brain-eating virus. And so strap in for the movie. When it introduces Sammy Terry, he gets out of a coffin. He stands up. He's got sort of a Frankenstein face makeup. He's kind of green, and he's got a big red cape with a hood. And it introduces him with a local news style chyron, like a little name tag at the bottom of the screen. Except it doesn't do the pun. It calls him Samuel Terry, and then under that it says Ghoul, I guess, is his occupation.
Yeah, I don't think I'd seen footage of this guy before, but I like the shtick. I think he had a good thing going here.
He also had a pet rubber spider named George.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like the main things you needed for one of these daytime horror host gigs was you need a little bit of makeup, a few props. You know, maybe you have some sort of a coffin in the shot. Get one from the local funeral home. But then mostly you just need to have a lot of enthusiasm to ham it up in front of the camera and talk, well, in this example, about basically anything in order to set up the motion picture.
I would say that at least in the one clip I watched, Sammy Terry seemed less oriented around puns and jokes than someone like Elvira or the Crypt Keeper, who they were just like chock full of densely packed comedy about the movies, if I recall. Sammy Terry seemed more like a sort of campy, hammy, direct monologue about monsters and frights.
I mean, maybe he was an actual ghoul. That's the thing. We're doubting the authenticity of the character. This is he's risen from the tomb here, and he's here to talk about tomb stuff. He doesn't even know there's a movie coming.
I didn't mean to disrespect his life's work. I mean, ghoul things are important.
Well, this was great. If anybody out there has any other examples of local TV horror hosts, I'd certainly love to hear about them. Like I say, there are so many of them, each one with their own kind of regional flair.
I saw one very heartwarming YouTube comment. That's not a common phrase. Where whoever it was just like, I remember every Friday night it was, you know, some particular local pizza delivery place and Sammy Terry.
Oh, see, that was event television. That's what they call it now.
Yeah.
All right. No, they don't call it event television. Appointment television. That was appointment television.
Ah.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close out this mailbag, but we'd love to hear from you. As always, we do listener mail on Mondays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Write in about core episodes of the show, past and present. Write in about past, present, and future episodes of Weird House Cinema. Everything's fair game. We'd love to hear from you. Like Joe said at the top of the episode, even if it's just to say hi.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. Once more, if you want to get in touch with us for any reason at all, it is contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.